Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. This is episode 14. I'm Hannah Norris, and I'm here with my husband,
Carl Donnelly.
And we have a guest that I will introduce in just a little while, because we finally released our episodes.
Well, yeah, this is the first one we're actually recording since we released some.
Yeah. So we've released 8 episodes so far, I think.
Yeah.
And people have started listening to them, and we've had some comments, which is really exciting. So you can find us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. That's at Cheggers Pod at all of them.
Yeah.
Get in touch. We've got a Gmail address as well.
Oh.
CheggersPod@gmail.com. So do get in touch with us and listen along and tell your friends.
And hopefully in the next, so now they're being released, get enough followers and listeners that we get free baby shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is the ultimate goal.
And then you'll talk about how it's so great.
Well, I've started pimping some stuff that I'm looking at already. Yes. That's because I think it's really great stuff.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's just that it's the nature of the game, isn't it? I don't reckon Deliciously Ella's paying for shit.
No.
Anyway.
No.
So, this is a podcast about pregnancy, and last week it was just Carl and I talking to each other, but we do have a wonderful guest this week. Yes. She's our first American.
Oh, God.
And first American.
I'm so sorry.
A comedian.
Yes.
And a fellow hoop earring.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's, and I'm not even wearing them right now, so you must have just absorbed that about me.
I was thinking that about you.
Thank you.
When I put my earrings on this morning, I was like, Sarah wears these. So Sarah Barron.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys so much for having me.
Welcome.
I feel so seen that you've clocked my jewelry wearing already.
Yeah, there you go. You are you're actually one of the first people that I've new people in my life who's only known me since I've been pregnant.
Yes. So we've met twice before.
Yeah.
But you were pregnant, but I didn't know you were pregnant. So I only kind of know you in this capacity.
Yeah.
Oh, that was with Yes, because where you were, was it the first time you met at Lou?
No, we met at a gig.
There was old rope, and you were on.
Yes.
And I said, I don't know if we might have said hello then.
Okay.
And then we were at Soho House.
For a gig, let's not seem too highfalutin. Yeah. We were just gigging there and got free access.
Hanging out with Tom
Cruise. Then at Lou Sanders' birthday party.
Yeah.
So at Lou's birthday, Lou was the only person who knew.
Yeah.
And so, it was eating her alive, the fact that she knew.
Yeah.
And couldn't tell people.
Yeah, that seems like that would challenge her. But she honored her promise to you.
She did.
Yeah, I'd be challenged by that.
So Adam Hess was there as well, and he said congratulations to me. But I didn't know if that was just him doing a weird Adam Hess greeting for no reason, or if he had a secret.
Oh, and to this day you don't know?
No, I just allowed that to be there.
Yeah, you never know with Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's impossible to read.
Yeah.
So you don't know what is going on in his mind.
And today we're recording this podcast in a hotel room in Nottingham. So Carl and I are sitting on the bed.
The atmosphere is really...
It's got a weird vibe.
It feels like I'm the therapist and you're the couple and I'm going to help you guys, which I'd be very up for.
I mean, it shows where our minds are different. I was like, this feels like some sort of weird swingers thing where we're interviewing you to see if you would like to join us.
Thank you, guys. Thank
you. Especially since last week, I suddenly looked down at my notepad and I'd written sex in big letters drawn a circle around it.
So that part of pregnancy.
Great. Are you at that part of pregnancy?
I don't know what part of pregnancy I'm at.
In terms of...
But I'm writing sex down.
That thing to me was like the craziest... The idea of like, I've never looked so quote unquote repulsive, and I've never wanted it more. And I'm like, what? And Amy Schumer has a very funny bit in the stand up special where she's pregnant, where she's like, her husband, they're sort of sat at opposite ends of the sofa, and he kind of like reaches his leg out to kind of touch her, and she's like, "Can I help you?" And that's how I felt, just like, fucking even look at me, you pig. Like, not feeling it. But I hope that you are in a different zone.
Because I was talking to someone the other day who had that, I think it was a father, and he was just talking about his wife and sort of the attractiveness of her body and her breasts and everything, but at the same time becoming mother. And I think there must be something in that that happens to the the guys, that you don't suddenly just become mother, but they
still. Yeah, my husband said he found it really sexy. Like, I think all women's bodies are different, but for me, it was very tummy. Like, it was ideal. It was just my tummy kept getting bigger. But I looked very much like myself until the last month. And then it was really insane.
Yeah.
But I think up until that month, my husband claims that he thought it was so sexy and looked so, and was like, you know, in some weird biological way, be like, I fucking did that. Yeah. Even though we did IVF. Yeah. So the whole thing is very ridiculous. But that's what he said. It was hard for me to identify with, because you move through the world, or I did, feeling very not sexual to anyone. You're not like, oh, all these other men who, you know, just might have gone, oh.
Yeah.
Like, just see this thing where you do look sort of already taken.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, they can't do anything with that. It's so weird how that all
goes. I mean, I love the look of pregnant women when they've got, when you can see it. It's beautiful and sexy and hot. Do you think pregnant women are hot, Carl?
Let me think how to, like,
could you see
this,
a woman other than, but that's what, like, I think it's so sexy and beautiful, and I love when they're, like, we're tight stuff.
Yeah, I think I can see what you mean. You're talking about when they really, really show it off, you know, when you see, like, a pregnant woman wearing a really tight dress.
Yes,
like a velvet.
There is definitely something there that is sexy.
Sexy or beautiful?
Both.
Yeah,
I'm trying to work out the diplomatic answer.
Well, because on the one hand, it's like, you know, you obviously have never been attracted to any woman other than your
absolutely
wife, obviously.
Not.
On the other hand,
especially not pregnant women.
Right.
I'm not just going out creeping on pregnant women
but
everywhere.
But maybe a lot of men are into it or do find it sexy, but I felt very non-sexy personally.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure. I was thinking actually today about, in Jess Foster Q's show, when she talks about growing her body, you know, the fact that doing strength training is the first time in her life that she started growing her body and feeling good about that. And in the same way, knowing that my body is growing, and there's still always those little things in my head. Anyway, and you're like, oh, well, my legs are getting bigger as well. Is that, why is that happening at the same time as my stomach?
Yeah.
But not judging that in the way that I would if I was not pregnant and just putting on weight.
Well, there's this woman I know who's pregnant. I think she's due. I won't say when she's due, because with all due respect, I assume she might not hear this, only because it's not been around very long, but I wouldn't want her to recognize herself. But she's due relatively soon, and she's, you know, there's a lot of, like, selfies and stuff on the line, and being like, never loved my body so much. And I'm like, and I say this with support and love for what's ahead of you.
Yeah,
like, call me when it's fucking at you.
Yeah.
Call me when you're like, I found it quite easy to love my body pregnant.
Yeah.
Post-pregnancy is
really,
when it's really hard. And the thing is that I know, unless, you know, for most women I know, unless they've sort of prior to pregnancy struggle with their weight.
Yeah.
And weight and body image, different thing, right?
Yeah.
But a proper struggle with your weight.
Yeah.
Everyone's, you know, you look different naked, but you look pretty much the same in clothes or whatever, whatever. But, so, you know, plenty of women are like, fucking getting my fucking body fucking back.
And mostly
that approach works. It's just you sat there going, I have a job and I can't see straight because I'm so tired, so I'm not going to force myself to go to the gym and that sort of stuff. But it was the post, like, I got, like, a memory on Facebook yesterday, because it's my, like, my husband and I met 9 years ago yesterday.
Oh, cool.
So this is our little period of, like, oh, remember on the 31st we this, and then on the 5th we did, you know, it's like that, it's that period.
Yeah.
And I got this, like, 9-year memory on Facebook, and it's like, fuck me, I was so much thinner. And I hate myself.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, God, I was thinner.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. It is, but it's part, you know, it's something
part of
that's
the experience.
So, yeah,
and I wanted to be pregnant, so it was all I wanted more than anything was pregnancy. And so a lot of the time I can connect to, like, well, it is like this because this thing that you thought you were going to lose your mind over if it didn't happen, happened. So it's fine.
Yeah.
And then you see a photo from 9 years ago. Oh, God.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. So I'm currently 19, weeks pregnant. And we got pregnant by IVF, which so did you.
So did we.
Yeah. And so I'm interested to know a bit more about that, because for us, we weren't really trying, but we weren't not trying. So, it was this factor of like having a baby would be really cool, but it's okay if it doesn't happen. Like, that's a genuine thought in my head. And we eventually went and got some tests. For us, everything was fine. And then they said the NHS were like, well, you can do IVF.
And did they provide that to you because you sort of said we've had unprotected sex for a year and that alone can entitle you?
What's the NHS rule? Is it a year or two?
I don't know.
I remember something about it being 2 years.
Yeah.
Because we wound up paying for it.
Right. Yeah.
Because I was like, I'm not, like, we started trying to have a kid, and I think this is the same for you, even though you both look like you're in your 20s. Like, I was, you know, we were mid-30s and my husband was 40 when we were, like, going to start. And I was like, I'm not waiting 3 years. I'm not waiting a year to find out that we're going to struggle. So, like, immediately.
Yeah.
I made him give a sperm sample. I mean, he didn't, you'll be surprised to hear, I got my blood test done a lot sooner than he gave a sperm sample. But over the course of a few months, we got it, and I came back fine. And his sperm, he's got a lot of it, but it didn't want to go anywhere.
Low motility.
It's exactly that. Yeah.
What? Was mine all right?
Yeah,
mine
yours was. Right. It happened in the past, you had.
I had lower motility. I had a sperm test like 10 years ago.
Oh.
And it was lower motility this year, or last year now. It was.
Were you a vegan a decade ago?
No.
Smoky, like
a heavier,
the drug. I mean, I used to live like Shane McGowan. So.
Yeah.
It's no wonder my sperm is now in better shape.
Did you have an emotional response to finding out about the motility when you were...
No.
You were like, whatever.
No, because I think I have always had this, and it's just, I think it's why we're probably quite on a good sort of level from our whole relationship of talking about having children. I've always been somebody who's... I've not got a desperate paternal instinct.
You don't. Right?
But I also really like kids. So I'm not one of these people that's like, I don't want kids. I'm not one of these people that say I need to have kids.
My husband was that way.
I've always been like, I think it'd be really nice. But if it can't happen, it's not the end of the world.
I think that's how my husband always felt.
Yes.
And I felt like, oh, no, I'm 100% having children. So we should just be real upfront about that. And what you may or may... Because you guys... I know this only from Carl's stand-up set, like you went, you had one round of IVF, you got pregnant, beautiful, thank fucking God. We didn't go on a terrible journey, which some people do, but ours was not, I mean, no one's is that easy except, you know, very lucky people. But he had a good job at the time and I was like, this is where money goes.
Yeah.
I'm not waiting another year to do this. Like, I can't handle it. We're going private. Very privileged position, and we used that, and so we did. And what you hear is that, like, the position that you want to be in is sperm is your problem. If sperm is your problem, no problem.
Really?
Yeah. If eggs are your problem, So we were like, you know, we would call ourselves like the king of the losers, the winners of the losers. Like, we're who you want to be. And we went in and I was, you know, exercising all the time. No caffeine, no boot. My body was, you know, and I'm a little worker bee. So I'm like, if you give me an assignment, I do everything. And so we did this round and I was like loving it. And I was loving how proactive it was.
Yeah.
And I just... fucking I'm not afraid of needle. Like, I was like, I was into it. It was really fucking weird, but I liked it. And then, so, you know, they do so all this stuff.
Needles in the
stomach.
So
I'm needling. I'm like, fucking, And I lived for it, which is very rare.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you pump yourself all up on hormones. Then there's a day you get this general anesthetic. They take the eggs out of you. They fertilize it with your husband's sperm. So your husband's sperm. My husband calls me small seed conservative Sarah because that shit is in there with me. Your husband. That's the only person you have a baby with. So they fertilize it and then you wait to see how many you get. And like 5 days later, they put them back up you.
Yeah.
And basically, on the day they put them up me, this anxiety took me over that was unlike anything I have ever known.
Yeah.
Because I intellectually knew, like, people get pregnant in war zones. Like, you're, so this is a fucking bullshit middle-class idiocy that we're like, if I'm not totally, just stop thinking about it. Yeah, I know that's crazy. And suddenly I was like, it's on me. I'm going to fuck this part up. I'm too anxious. This baby is being conceived. It will be a killer. Or what? Like, I got so... We don't say we got so mental anymore. But I got so...
Fucked in the head.
Fucked in my head. And it was an excruciating 10 days.
Yeah.
And the night before I was supposed to take my... You pee on it. You know, you take a pregnancy test one morning and... Didn't sleep all night. We went on like a weekend away. And, you know, Jeff slept and I was up all night and I woke up in the morning and I went to wipe, you know, I pee on the stick and then wipe myself and there was blood. So I sort of knew I had my period and then I looked and it was negative. And all of the feedback up until that point had been like, you have an A++ embryo. Like, this is... And I was overcome with grief that was like, I still, when I think about, like, I was, then we had to fly back on a plane and he just had to, I sobbed for 8 hours. He sort of called, you know, part of it is all these hormones, there's all this stuff going on. So that was horrendous. Then we try a second time. I get pregnant.
How much longer after?
Well, as soon as you can do. So I can now, you know, all this stuff is so relevant, but I think it wasn't even a few. I think maybe it was two.
Yeah.
So that happened in February. It happened on February 15th. And then we started going again in April.
Yeah.
So maybe 2 months later. And on April 22nd, I took a positive pregnancy test.
Yeah.
The joy of joys, joy of joys. And somewhat quickly, someone was like, So we're not thrilled with your hormone levels.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, long and short of it is, I then miscarried that pregnancy. Okay. Grief.
You were taking all the hormones that you need.
Because we had to do a whole other full... Because this doctor that we saw, his thing was like, you're fine, you're in perfectly good health, so we're going to take, like, a delicate hand with this. Yeah. So we're not going to do this, and we're not going to put two embryos up you, and we're not going to do any of that shit. And... I miscarried, and that, you know, and miscarriages can be such, like, I have plenty of friends, and almost every single woman I know who's been pregnant over 35 has miscarried.
Yeah.
And plenty of them are like, it's depressing. Because it's a second pregnancy, or they had mixed feelings or something. Yeah. For me, it was like we'd been trying to have a kid for 2 years. I was bereft.
Yeah.
And back to the thing about being, like, a good student. You know that life is unfair. You know that life is unfair. Yeah. You know that all these different things. And it was the first really shitty thing that had ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And I, which means I'm very lucky.
Yeah.
But I was suddenly like, if I can't get pregnant, like, I want to be pregnant so bad. I want to push a baby out of my body so bad. And then mother that baby so bad that if this doesn't happen for me, they'll just be like, a little part of me is going to die.
What is my life?
Yeah. And we'll adopt and we'll do these things and that will be beautiful. My husband was adopted. So I just wanted him. Like, I was like, he fucking should get one, that thing with one person. You know, I was so overcome with rage and sadness.
Yeah.
And then the next time we did it, got pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, we took one of the frozen ones and put it up, and that's my son. And I think what happened for me was, like, I don't think I had postpartum depression, but I was miserable and panicked when my son was born for a long time. And I think that part of that was just when you struggle to get pregnant. He was a difficult baby. He was colicky, all this stuff. But I also think when you struggle to get pregnant, I was so naive about it. Yeah. I was very realistic going into marriage. I was like, I get it. This isn't going to be great, but let's do it. But with motherhood, I was like, I'll be on maternity leave. So I'll, like, put the little baby in a sling and, like, we'll go. And I just didn't understand the hellfire that I was in for.
Right.
Again, you might have a different experience.
Yeah.
Mentally and physically and what do you think? Or mostly mentally, do you think?
Mentally. I think, like, physically I didn't like it. I tore. Yeah. It was infected. I couldn't sit down for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that wasn't great. But it was more, what I now understand, like, I've always wanted two kids. That's always been the thing. And now I'm like, I can't fucking do it. I didn't know myself as a mom. I didn't know.
And that's because that kind of post-birth.
It's because what I've worked out about myself is that I met my husband and I was nearly 32. I'd been in relationships before, but the longest I'd been monogamous was like 14 months.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't a relationship person. I lived alone for 6 years. Like, and all I wanted through all of that was to have a boyfriend. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, I love this shit. When the right guy came, I was like, anybody? Like, I was so lonely. But in fact, I really had a lot of alone time.
Yes.
And just even the shift into a relationship of not wanting to do what I wanted and not, and like the compromise and learning all that shit.
Yeah.
And then when I had this kid and I couldn't check out.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed me. Like I remember, and he was a tough baby, so he couldn't, I remember I would get, and I was still ridiculous using the word triggered because it's a fucking word now, but like, my kid wouldn't go in a pram.
Right.
We couldn't put him down for about 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Because he'd cry.
He had to be on a tit for 8 weeks.
Right.
Wow.
It was horrible. So I'd be like, trying to be like, I'll go for a walk. The baby only weighs 10 pounds. 10 pounds. And I would see other people with newborns and newborn prams. And I would, like, we'd go to baby cinema. And I'd see all the prams lined up and be like, why do I have the one baby that doesn't go in a pram? Why do I, you know, like, I couldn't put him down.
And my that was from him more than you not wanting to put him down.
That was the whole thing. It's all this, what you start figuring out is that like, if a very judgmental thing that I think is that like, if you meet kids who can't go to strangers, it's because the fucking parents have raised a kid who doesn't want to go to strangers because mommy needs to be the only one.
Yeah.
Or mommy, it's only mommy and daddy. And like all this shit. I mean, that's what I think, but I hadn't heard of attachment parenting.
Yeah.
And my friend was just like, this is called attachment parenting. It's going to be great for the kid. I was like, okay, attachment. But I was like, I'm going to, you know, I couldn't, it was basically like we'd get in bed at 10 o'clock. We'd get out of bed at 10 a.m. and I didn't sleep the whole time because if my tit got out of his mouth, he would scream. Wow. And think what that does mentally to a person. It was horrendous. So it was just, you know, what I remember being at this stage that you guys are at and being like, here's what I don't get about this. Like, you hear people say, oh my God, like, you know, make sure you do all this, like, batch cooking. Yes. Like, get a lot of food. You're not going to have time to brush your teeth. And you're like, oh my God, I don't have time to roll. Okay, oh, here we go, full on, but I can take it. And then you also hear people say all they do is sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do those two things fit together? And then what you realize is like babies are really, really different.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
And also like some babies will sleep in a little pram and my son had to be in a baby carrier or lying against my tit to sleep.
Yeah.
So we kind of didn't sleep for months.
So it's weird that you can get all that advice, all the advice in the world, all the tips, all the stories, but it's going to be personal and
unique to whatever your relationship
is.
Yeah, and I think that I'm reading this book weirdly by Ruby Wax right now where she talks, and there's this really interesting part where she talks about being very open about her own depression. That's almost like part of her carrying card or whatever. It's like, I am depressed. I am open about that. This is an important conversation. And that she would be in the midst of like, doing documentaries about depression and like institutionalized, like her husband would get her out of the institution to go to do the interview.
Wow. Yeah.
But she was so ashamed of that, that she played it like that wasn't where she was at, even though what it was supposed to be about was an open conversation about depression. And I was like, it's sort of like a bit, like what I thought of was farting. Like, I'll be like, oh, I'm a very gassy, I fart. But think how different saying that is than just sitting in this chair and trying to fart in front of you. Like, it's, and I think with motherhood, it's like, we're modern women.
Yeah.
We know that we should be open about, but it's too, no one actually is, because it's too, you know, and I do not, and I think women shouldn't feel shame if they feel that their kid was a mistake, but like, I don't feel my kid was a mistake. Yeah. I'm so happy to have him. My life is, but like, I feel terrible a lot of the time about how much space I need for myself.
Yeah.
And I said, did you guys see Jessie Cave's show Sunrise?
Yes.
Yeah.
She talks about being in a wonderful show. But she talks about being in this big bed with her kids.
Yeah.
And this,
with the cage around.
With this sort of a cage around so that the kids can't get away. Yeah. And even now when I talk about that, I feel physically sick to myself, because I can't sleep in a bed with my son, and I've pretty much never been able to.
Yeah.
And I actively hate myself for like needing that physical, and my husband does, like my husband and my son will co-sleep sometimes, but like mommy needs her space, and as a woman you feel terrible.
That's what I was
going
to say.
Dads, fuck it. I know a million men who say that, and they're fine, and they're high achievers, which I'm not. That makes a difference. But I know a lot of men, or I know a handful of men who are dads, who are workaholics, who are super successful, and it's like they can't do that job on broken sleep. So they sleep separately. Right. The mom and kids co-sleep. Yeah, yeah. And I feel like maybe I don't know. It's not just about like, oh, I could justify it if I was making like $400,000 a year. It's also like, as a woman, I feel like a little bit broken.
Also,
I mean,
we talked about it on some of the other episodes about that book, Why French Children Don't Throw Food.
Yeah.
And, it's an American writer living in Paris, having a child, raising a child. And she talks about the difference in psychology between like a French woman who's got a newborn compared to an North American or British sort of...
Because the French woman thinks what?
The French women don't think a child should take away your existence as an individual.
Well, that's what I think I feel. Yeah. And
you're French.
I think my essence is French.
Yeah.
But I am not fucking French. So I feel so bad, and I... Like, did you guys do NCT?
We're coming up in May, yeah.
I'm not her best friend, but she is my best friend. Like, I'm like, you know, you're my best fucking friend, right? Like, she's like, well, I've lived here my whole life, so ease up, I got other friends. But it was so weird. We went into it so skeptical, and my two favorite people are, like, my two NCT people. And I saw one of the ones who didn't become one of my good friends on a bus immediately. I went in the group. The first day, I was like, I like the lady with the pink hair and the one whose husband made a joke about goat's cheese. I'm going for those two bitches, the rest of you. And I was right. And one of them I saw on the bus. Like, it was recently, I was going to a gig and I had a night where I felt good. I was like, my look is hanging together well tonight. Like, I felt good. I felt cool or whatever. I was going to some good gig and I felt good, and I saw her on the bus, because I have a lot of sadness about not having another kid. Manageable sadness, but sadness. And I saw her on the bus with her daughter. So I haven't seen her in years, and I would see that newborn baby constantly over the course of like 3 months. And so that baby is now 3+, like my son, and she's had another one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know her husband has a big deal job, and I know she has completely lost her footing professionally. But I mean, it just, that's what the fuck happens.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to know.
Yeah.
You gotta go. It really, but anyway, separate thing. And I saw her and I was like, you have that second kid, and I have my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't really figure out really what I wanted to do till I was 35.
Yeah.
And I'm 40 now, and I can't. That to me is, feels like this little thing I'm holding that feels so much more important.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. It doesn't feel so much more important to me. It feels a little bit.
yeah,
more important to me than another kid. And then yeah, that feels like me going, well, mommy's job matters more than you having a sibling, which I think if someone else said that to me, I'd be like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You do you. He can be close with his cousins and get out into the world and meet people. Fine. Yeah. But actually, I feel guilty and shitty about it as well.
But I guess, like, it's also to do with that picture of yourself, isn't it? Like, when I was younger, I used to think of myself having two kids as well. And now we're here. I'm 40 as well. So we're having this baby. And some people have asked, are you going to have a second one? And right now I'm like, I haven't thought about that. But when I'm looking at other people as well who have two children and you see that extra workload and the kind of it happening again, that right now
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, and I worship him. Yeah. I have a younger brother who I worship.
Yeah, what's our age difference? Brother.
4 years.
So, and you get on well?
Yeah, we did. I hated him. Like, all my diary entries from, like, a kid are being like, I hate my... Like, I hated him, and I can remember thinking, like, seeing other siblings and being like, how can you love your brother?
Yeah.
Like, I actively hated him.
Until what age?
I think then he didn't occur, like, once we became teenagers, so, like, I'm 16 and he's 12, then you're just this well of self-absorption and hormones. Yeah. So for a while he sort of didn't occur, went, like, hatred doesn't occur to me, void, like, non-existent, you don't count as a human. And then by the time I was left for university and we weren't living in a house together, and, like, that little precious thing was over... Then he just seemed like the funniest, weirdest, greatest guy. And, like, he's so, he presents as super macho. Mm-hmm. He's got three, we're 4 years apart, but we got married, you know, within a year and had kids within, like, so all that grown up shit has happened. Yeah. And I just, like, you know, what I will, like, I don't really mean what I'm saying, but I can sometimes just move through the world being like, I hate everyone except my brother. Right. Like, he's my favorite. You know, marriage is much more complicated. It's just, you know, and it's like your day to day. Like, my husband will be my favorite. You know, he's who I can be around a lot if we were not going to kill each other. And then my brother's just the best, best fucking guy out there.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so painful for me. And my husband has a much more loaded relationship with his siblings.
Well, that's what I was just saying, like, because I was just trying to work out the psychology of it.
Do you have siblings?
I've got one older brother.
Of course, your brother who lives in Nottingham,
So he's like 7 years older, and just
you're a little...
couple of people that lived in the same house. Yeah, we didn't really ever hang out or do anything together. So if I imagine a family... In my head, I think I've always imagined one kid, because I always think I felt like a lonely child.
See, but this is what I was saying this to my husband the other day, is that, like, up until I met my husband, and I know you're not supposed to say this kind of thing, but, like, you know, because you think, like, relationships don't solve problems.
Yeah.
But I really had this loneliness in me my whole, like, the first time.
I
just realized
I accidentally said lonely child, not only child, which is
that. Is that what you meant? Did you mean to say lonely?
I meant to say only child, but
did you feel lonely?
It came out of my subconscious. When I was very young, I was a lonely little child. I used to spend a lot of time thinking on my own. I can remember, like, being 3 or 4 and being, like, and, like, just sitting. Thinking about
death. But I mean, I think that's beautiful and everything's fine and, like, you're with... Like, I feel like everything you need to know in a human is in their partner. So the second I meet Hannah and I'm like, oh, great. You're right, Carl seems great. And, like, he's not just fronting. He's a lovely guy, you know. But I saw a therapist for the first time at, like, 23.
Yeah.
And, they famously say, upon arrival, I'll be like, so why are you here? And I remember just going, I... feel so alone. And, like, I did. And that, I've always felt really alone.
Yeah.
And that fully stopped for me when I, like, I don't feel alone anymore. And it happened the day I met my husband.
Yeah.
And so, what that's all to say is that, like, my brother, I've always had, like, a best friend and a brother, like, I'm, but just, My point is, I'm not going to take loneliness away from my kid.
Yeah.
He's going to have it, he's not. There are all these other factors going on. Like, I have a really loaded relationship with my mother, and I, what I want for my son is to feel a little bit easier about his mom.
Yeah.
By the way, the fact that I'm saying this, if we keep it in, means I'm not going to tweet this interview if it goes out, because my mother will be like, well, what did she say here? But my mom can exhaust the shit out of me in a way that's so extreme, and I'm like, okay, if I can't give him a sibling, then I really hope when he's 40 he feels this way about me, which is not something that my mom was able to give me, even though she gave me all this other really good shit.
Yes.
Well, I always think there's that thing that the point of evolution is you evolve beyond your parents, you know?
Yeah. Like
whatever you've been given, there's lots of good stuff, but you're supposed to get better than them, right? If things are working and you're progressing, then that's just a simple thing to be a bit better or get those things that weren't quite right in your own experience of what either seeing their relationship or the way they parented you, and just going, these are the things I want to tweak and get right when
I do it. And I think, you know, this thing that's been really useful for me and my sort of overall happiness is that I know some I met someone who will remain nameless. I mean, I'll tell you when we're not recording. But I'll write it down. Can I write it down right here?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I will say it out loud and get us all in trouble.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes.
So that person. So very successful and very successful at a certain stage at something that I wanted to be really amazing at.
Yeah.
And I met that person's kid and they were just a dirty little shit. And I was like, oh, the most, I know it's like, so, but it was like the moment where you're like, people are like, the most important thing in the world to me is being a good mom. And it's like, what? No one's behavior matches up to that. Certainly not the dad's a lot of the time. You, the most important thing to you, love your kid. The worst thing that could happen to you would be for something bad to happen to your child. Yes. That's true. But the most important thing to you is your job. That's everything about how you behave.
Mm.
And there was something in seeing that dynamic where I was like, oh, the most important thing for me in a real way is that I don't raise a cunt. That's all I care about. And
I think that's why I'm reading just loads of like psychology books. Like I started on the sort of pregnancy type books.
Yeah.
And I realised that's sort of your field, that you're, you know, that's what you're experiencing that. I can read a bit like a pregnancy for men is good to tell me what the fact. Yeah. But I've gone on this sort of like reading jaunt about not just child psychology but psychology, because I want to learn how to act better to give that kid the best chance of growing up to not be a prick.
Hello, I'm Chris England, and I'm here to tell you about the Fun Factory podcast, available now on Great Big Owl. Each time, I will be reading a couple of chapters of my novel, The Fun Factory, a historical comedy about the history of comedy. So it will kind of be like a free audiobook, which you can listen to at the gym, or jogging, or at your desk while pretending to do your job, or on the train without the embarrassment of people seeing you actually reading a book like some kind of SWAT.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Two questions on that. One, what do you feel you've read that has seemed the most useful and intelligent, and what have you read that has seemed like garbage?
Well, I mean, we've talked about the sort of Philippa Perry's book.
I read that.
And that one I actually probably felt the most distant from that way of like the constant language she uses when talking to a kid. I'm like, just doesn't feel realistic to me.
Right.
Yeah, that's not a way that I feel like I could just physically speak.
Right.
So I much prefer the ones like They Fuck You Up by Oliver James.
Right.
That's about early childhood psychology and how that sort of first 3 years.
Yeah.
Basically everything you do, that kid is going to soak up and that will ultimately become who they are.
Yeah.
So, but it also, so that sounds really daunting, but also what I took from it was the sort of thoughts that everything is repairable if you're self-aware enough of how you're acting.
Yeah, and the thing too is it's like the people, like, by virtue of reading a parenting book, it means you don't need a parenting book. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you'll be present, yeah, and you'll be kind, and yeah, you'll be good, and there'll be some weird shit, and the kid will pick that up, and it's like, it's all sort of, it's just, like, I had this friend, and she was, like, So my mother had this thing where she'd be like, I never made my children say please or thank you. I just said, I don't believe that you do that. I just modeled and you and Sam always say please and thank you. You know, she had this thing about please and thank you. Mm-hmm. So this friend of mine was always like, do we say, you know, she was doing this real like manner stuff, yeah, with her kid. And then we were at the playground and there were just two swings. It was very clear that there was a cue forming,
yes,
but she had no awareness of the cue. And yeah, it's like, there's just all this, you say one thing, yeah, and you do another, yeah, and you catch yourself in it, and like, we've been potty training for ages, it's a fucking nightmare. we've read this book, and it's like, whatever you, it's because it's so bad, the kids don't care, but you're, as a parent, you're sat there constantly dealing with the stuff, and you get piss on you, and shit on you, and it, you know, and the book is like, just, the whole message should just be, it's fine, you'll get there when you get there.
Yeah.
It is so impossible in the moment of digging shit out from under your fingernails to, yeah, be like, sweetheart, why did you not, like, it, you know, and it's, yes, just this, and it's like,
but that's, it's so interesting then, the books that you do read or the advice you choose to take compared to what kind of happens.
Well, so I was one of these people who was like, I don't believe in parenting book, not anything that strong, yeah, but more sort of like, there's this, I, like, the kid will be who the kid will be.
Yes.
So I'm going to try and just, and but I can feel that with myself because I was, like, a real reader and my husband was, yeah, a real reader. And my kid, not interested. Like, we go to the library. I'm like, he likes the library because we're readers. And he, you know, like, the library. He wants to just play with the machine. And, like, I can feel myself, yeah, being like, we're readers.
Yeah.
Your father, yeah, excelled in school. Your mother wasn't as smart, but she worked like a dog. Yeah. You're gonna, you know, and you, even as the person who knows, you know, and you're just kind of trying to not do that shit. And then, so my brother, who also was like, I just think nothing fucking matters. And then I sound like just letting his kid have free reign with like all this awful YouTube shit.
Yeah,
and I was like,
right.
Yeah.
That's my nephew. Some stuff matters. Off of the YouTube, yeah, CBBS. Do you know what I mean?
But like, I just finished a book I read called The Shallows, which is about internet usage.
And what did it say? Oh, well, this stuff always makes me so crazy.
This one isn't about children. It's just about the modern age. Really.
Yeah.
But I just read about, it was referencing another thing I read. And it just talks about how too much internet use is destroying our ability to think on any level, like on a deep level, because you're reading stuff very quickly. And
so what should we do?
Well, it's about trying to encourage people to read, your children to read, physically reading something that, you know, a book is actually, because you're static and you're focused on this one thing you're holding. Apparently, you know, that is much better than obviously looking at a screen where there's going to be links in what you're reading to click on, and suddenly you're jumping around and what you're doing is learning loads of little bits. So it's loads.
We never deep dive anymore.
You never actually stop and read one thing well enough to let it go into your actual memory. Anyway, that's a different side point.
And then what they also say, because I'm like pretty good about, or I'm paranoid about that stuff, so I'm a bit regimented with my kid about it, and I only mean a bit. But then you read like the much bigger issue than how much TV your kid is watching.
It's what they're watching.
Well, that, but also it's their vision of you on the phone.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh my kid. You know, I mean, I think a lot. There was some funny story I heard of a woman saying her kid came home with like a drawing of her. And it was, like, her holding her iPhone. Oh. But, I mean, that must be, like, it makes me feel terrible. Like, we'll sit and I'll be like, this is our precious time on Mondays and Thursdays. After he does this, we sit and get pizza. And it's like, we do and it's sweet. And he's staring off into space because I don't want my child looking at an iPhone while he eats. but I'm looking at my iPhone while he eats.
Yeah, it's a interesting. It's like those things when you see kids do that. My mummy is this old, and always she loves drinking wine. And
yeah.
Favorite drink is wine, and she loves doing this stuff.
My mommy is always sleeping in the loft and staring at her iPhone. That's my kid would say. And yet, I just want to say also, because I was thinking about this, like, because, like, Carl, what you do professionally and all this stuff I've said, like, I'm at a stage now where because I can, like, it's so funny. I've been sat here and I was like, I feel emotional. You guys are very good at your job, which I'm sure you must be. But also I'm like, I feel incorrect in my body if I have a day now where I'm not with my child.
Yeah.
I don't mean full time. I don't love our full days. But you know, I need to see him in the morning. We need to cuddle in the morning, get him his breakfast. Mommy, today. You know, we need that. I need those pillars in my day. Mm. And if I have a full day of not seeing him, I feel really, like, unhappy, and I get upset. Like, if I'm in the coffee shop and someone's pushing a pram in, and she's with her son.
Yeah.
Even though when I'm with him all day, I'm like, oh, fuck, all right, I got to hand this kid over. Jeff said he could take him at 5, but if he can take him at 4:30, then I could wash my hands. You know, it's like, that's how it really is. Yeah. But
that little bit of separation makes you, it's like.
Yeah, and a lot of stand-ups, you know, will, like with Edinburgh, with a kid, I mean, murderous. And it'll be like, yeah. And I'll say like, oh, how are you doing? And they'll be like, yeah, well, my wife is, you know, she's going to bring the, she's going to miss him so bad. Oh, it's killing me. But she's going to bring the kids up on the 15th. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going 2 weeks without seeing my. And by the way, to be clear, I know women who do can that as well. Yeah. So it's not fair for me to divide it quite along those lines. Yeah. But
it's so many of those interesting things about how you can prejudge things or what you expect. It's like those things even about co-sleeping, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I see that as an idea and I go, I think it's a bit weird when the kids are in the bed with the parents for too long. Like, I right now I'm like, I like the idea of a child having its own space, that it's not then a family bed. There's a kid's bed and there's a parent's
bed. Because were we talking last night about naked sleeping?
I was just about to say, I know about you guys that you're naked sleepers. My husband and I are as well. I'm telling you right now, you're going to be naked in that bed with your naked baby, and that is exactly what's going to happen for you for like a couple months. It's 100% how you're going to do it. I promise you.
But obviously then, what's the cutoff point?
So I got there. So I'm obsessed with sleeping.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, call me up at like 6 months because I know the magic doctor, and she, even if your kid sleeps okay, you want this lady, she changes your life. And as someone who works nights, you want to get to that. You don't want to be that 5 a.m. person.
Yeah.
Anyway, what we did was I remember the first night I like brought this baby home and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck? Yeah. And I like, there was a bassinet. I'm like, I guess the baby goes in the bassinet.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, we're getting out of the bassinet. And then he was just like on my tit. And then we're like, we'll try the co-sleeper. No. So he was immediately in bed. And then over the course of a few months, it just got a little less insane. Yeah. He didn't have to be on my tit all the time. And, like, there was a point where, like, I was just, my husband will not like me sharing this because he thinks it makes him look like he was shaming me, which he wasn't. He was trying to say something funny. But I got so used to just whipping my breasts out all the time. Yeah. We were just, like, walking through a park and I, like, whip my tit out and put my kid on. And I'm like, he's like, it's not the tundra. And I'm like, yeah. But I was just so used to it. So we, by 4 months, he was, this is the thing, the key thing. And you know Brona Titley. Do you know Brona Titley?
No.
She's a writer. Neither of you know her? She writes. You should talk to her. She just had a kid.
We take notes as we go. Tips.
She writes for everything.
Yes.
Comedy-wise. And I was like, you need to, there's one thing that you need. The one, and it's called the sleepy head. So you swaddle them. You get this little thing that's Velcro. Don't do any of the real swaddling. You get a Velcro thing. You put them in it. So they're like this. Then they go in the sleepy head, which is like, so they're basically, and she's got like a 3-week-old and she was like, thank you for the sleepy head. And I was like, you're welcome. That's the one. So get that sleepy head. Yeah. If you're going, get the sleepy head. Do you have a king size bed? No. Queen size?
We might be no, swapping just, bit.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna move into our other bedroom, the second, the spare room.
So if you get the sleepy head in the co-sleeper. So it was sort of like that. And then I was like, get that kid. Because what I think is I think these people, okay, we've got the kids in the bed for a while. Like, I think a couple should sleep in bed together. I think it's important. I think, I say this as someone who sleeps half the night in the loft because my husband snoring wakes me up. But I think, and we go to bed together. Yes. That's like a thing.
A lot of comics don't have that. And I think, that's something I've always done. Like, I know some comics who, you know, they'll come home and they need to stay up for 3 hours because they're wired from their gig. I'll come home from a gig and if Hannah's getting ready to go to bed, we'll just go to bed and I'll get in.
My husband, it's annoying. We have to go to bed together. And it's funny because I'll get annoyed with my husband sometimes because he'll wait up for me. I mean, if it's a night where you're home at 11, then it's fine. But if it's a night where you're like, I'm not going to get home tonight till 12:30. But he'll wait up for me and I'll be like, don't fucking wait up for me, asshole. Like, someone's got to get up at 7 and I want you to be, you know, but it is important and all that. And I always feel like if you got 2-year-old in the bed with you, this is about some other shit that you got going on. Yeah. And that's like kid, obviously I'm not talking in a sexual way, but that's like kid fulfilling mommy needs. It's not.
Yeah.
There's a point.
But like you were saying before about kind of those feelings of guilt of not being able necessarily to sleep with him.
Yeah.
But that's also, because you can look at that and go, well, actually I'd prefer not to be. I don't think I'm not really into that.
I'd love to be able to like curl up around my kid and have him do these beautiful, like, you know, people will be like, oh, you know, Elsie's at a stage. No, she's like back climbing into bed with us. And I'm like, oh, if Jean gets in the bed, I go. I can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hate myself. But also, I do know that there's all this other, these ways that I think I'm pretty self-aware. And I think that, I hope that makes me a good mom.
Mm.
That's what I think I have to offer him.
Yeah, I'm sure. With all the, you're talking about just being on the boob all the time. I know that at this point in pregnancy where I'm at 19 weeks, this is when they start sucking their thumb inside the womb. Isn't that weird that they're on it already?
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, they come out going, like, it's very animal. It's really wild.
What's the thing I read to you the other day about now that it's, was it last week or the week before they'd start, they get covered in that?
There's some white stuff they get covered in.
Goop.
But it's the lips as well. That's what you wrote down. They've started getting lips.
Oh, they started forming their lips. And there was another thing I wrote down. I can't remember what it was. Anyway. just find their fun little facts.
That you get I know. And like, I remember we had something where like showed you the size it was and you'd be like, now it's a peach. It's a peach.
Do you know what it is now?
Is it a courgette?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a little courgette. Yeah.
And 250 grams as well.
That's a nice one.
You know, you see pictures when people give birth prematurely when they sometimes seem to be courgette sized.
Yeah.
They're that little. But it's quite fully formed.
Yeah.
And that's something that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I think that's like a person now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the time throughout the midwife things and the doctor's appointments, they say up until 20 weeks, you go to A&E, I think, if you have a problem.
Yes.
After 20 weeks, you go to the labor ward. Oh, so that's what, like, if something happens after 20 weeks.
They're going to try and see what they can do,
And that's the thing, that this week we had a scan at the premature clinic because 4 weeks ago I went for a scan there because in 2013 I had abnormal cells on my cervix.
Right.
And so they got lasered off.
Yes.
Which is quite a common procedure. It's like...
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I've heard friends have had that done.
Kind of like... When you get regular pap smears, often, in Australia anyway, when you get to 30, you can get these, just some abnormal cells. And if they see them at a certain level, they ask you to come back a year later for a pap smear rather than 2 years.
And it's all like, essentially it's all like cervical cancer prevention.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So they can grow and if it gets to a certain level, it becomes cancerous.
Right.
And so that's one of the points of pap smears is to make sure that everything's healthy. Yeah. So over a year, my cells had got worse. So they did an operation where they lasered them off and then everything was fine after that. And all my pap smears since then have been fine. But when I went to the midwife appointment, she said, I'd mentioned it, and she was like, it's great that you've said that, because what can happen is your cervix is a bit weaker than normal.
Oh, okay.
So I'd like to book you in to go to the premature clinic just to check in and make sure that everything's fine. So we went, and it was totally fine. My cervix was a normal 3 centimetres.
Congratulations.
In case you also didn't know how long a cervix is.
I didn't know.
And they said, come back in 4 weeks. Looks like everything's fine. We just want to make sure that that's still the case.
Yeah, they're just watching you.
But when we went back this week, it had gone to 2.5 centimetres. So it got a bit shorter, which means that potentially the weight of the baby is pushing on it a bit as it grows.
Okay.
And then, the thing, if the cervix shortens too much, then you go into labour prematurely.
Yeah.
So they we go back this week again.
So, and then what do they do?
Well, but they also said there's, you know, it could be just the way the baby was that day. You know, there's a lot of factors that could just be, it's a very temporary thing. So
yeah, it could have just been pushing on it in a certain way, which has shortened it at that moment. And so what happens is that we go back, they put me on progesterone now, so like back in the old IVF days when you're inserting them up your fanny. These ones don't, I had applicators in the past, but these are just like a mini
waxy
tampon.
Yeah, just get them up. Yeah, and then the ones up your butt right before, did you have to put one up your butt?
I had to do one up my bum, yeah, I think, before the
The general, anaesthetic.
The applicators just had, I just remember hearing the sound of it happening. There was a, it was a little click. So I'd sometimes I'd go in, if we were getting into bed, say, I'd be brushing my teeth, Hannah would get into bed, I'd walk into the bedroom, she'd on under the covers, I didn't know she was applying the thing. So she just looked like she was lovely and comfortable in bed. And suddenly I'd just hear, I'd be like, what was that noise?
You're like, it's popping!
One of those things that, you know, like, we've said before, like, we don't, at this stage, it's pre-child stage, we don't wee around each other or do things like that.
We close doors
and farting thing.
Very different household than mine. Okay, great.
So kind of shoving something up my vagina in front of you was
so why did you, why did that feel different to weeing in front of each other, for example?
Oh, no, it felt uncomfortable at first, but then I got used to it because I just had to do it every night.
And it was like, you know, we would just, like... You weren't coming up, running up to me and doing it in my face.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah, how dare you. I'm having to put progesterone in now. And then what were you going to say?
Well, I'm interested in the peeing. Like, my husband and I are, I mean.
Doors open.
Oh, my God. It's like nothing you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And I was thinking with, and there are things about that that I think, like, When people make different decisions about things, marriage, relationship, what's so uncomfortable is that it implies, like, and it's so true with parenting, is it like, did you change your name when you got married?
No.
Right, me neither. Mm-hmm. So what we will both say publicly is like, oh, but women should do what they want. But then you're like, yeah, but you fucking change your name. That's weird. I'd never do that. Do you know what I mean? And that there is this inherent judgment. And then that triples with stuff to do with parenting. And then this, like, private couple, not private couple divide.
Yeah.
What's so interesting to me about that is that I really don't think, like, I'm not like this, all right, guys, have fun keeping the mystery alive. Like, I think that's really, really great. And I do actually think they're really, really great and important. Like, I think both sides in a real way have great and important components to them, which I don't actually think about anything ever.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, was that a conscious choice?
Well, I've got a really big routine about it. I do sometimes.
You do? Yeah, and I was thinking, they somehow know that about you.
And it's basically, what I talk about is, as long as you're both on the same page, I think you're fine.
So, was it a conversation?
Ours was not a conversation. It was this weird...
It's just natural?
The first time you probably, even like, it got discussed was when you probably saw me do that routine.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't particularly realised that we didn't fart around each other. Until I saw him do a routine about the fact that he pulls his bum cheeks apart to do silent farts.
Yeah.
And it cracks me up.
Fascinating.
And with I know sometimes I leave the door open when I do a wee, but you wouldn't.
I have noted those. Thank you. I've noted them in my journal.
Yeah. They're just like.
It's just.
It's quite,
I'm talking like people that would go to the toilet while their partner's in the shower or bath right next to them.
Oh yeah. I mean, the shit I have seen, it's like, yeah, we're, it's...
I think that Carl leads on. I think you do.
I'm more squeamish. Yeah, I mean, you've told me that I've made you a prude, which is
a little bit.
I can't. I am, again, this really is not like I don't think it's good. I think it's got some problematic components to it, but I think like sometimes I'll be in the midst of my marriage, like, look, you know, really like, and we're sat here and I have no, like, I'm really self-conscious about not having makeup on or stuff, you know, and I will be in a, not like I'm shitting or vomiting, just like waking up, like I look rough. Like I do have to work to not look rough. And I think there's so much intimacy. Like before I was with my husband, I was like, how do you, so well, are you just like with someone and they're just like shitting and you're shitting and they just see me in the morning, just on the regular, like, and then they'll still love me. Like, I really couldn't. And so I think I needed to know, like, I think it's some way that I feel that this shit is real.
Yeah.
He needs to, you know, and
it's all in.
Yeah. And I don't think he was always, like, he has said to me, like, you fucked me up. Like, I wasn't a pig like this before.
I think it is it's slightly odd because the fact that we are, like, quite hippie-ish, you know, we do sleep naked, there's no shame or anything
Being
naked. It's just, for some reason, it's just with me. I don't know if something happened in childhood, but I'm very squeamish around bodily functions.
And you, so if I may say this, or may ask, like, this isn't just a singular thing in this relationship. You've seen it manifest in other relationships that you've both had.
No, I think you've said in the past,
I think my ex...
Yeah, I think I've had farting in past
relationships. Yeah, my ex-marriage, I think we were a bit more... It wasn't like carnage, but there was definitely a bit more like, now and again, it'd be quite funny.
Now and again.
And that was...
right, okay.
But that was...
So the sort of commitment to the cause.
Yeah.
The organically
occurring. It doesn't feel like... But it's not something that feels like... I don't feel like I'm... spending all day holding in farts.
But I hope so. It's not like, and you did like you did one. When was it?
Oh, yeah, a few days ago.
You were lying there, like very, so looking at, and you were pushing your belly out and talking about, and just one came out.
Yeah,
and that was funny. I ran away and did a little loop of the kitchen.
You did.
Yeah, just for fun.
Oh, okay,
the victory.
Yeah, like I sort of celebrated.
Oh, right.
Because. Yeah, it was funny to me that she let one out.
Yeah.
Well. So it's not like a sort of, you disgust me.
No. That's what's so interesting, and it's why I feel really comfortable asking you guys about it. It's very clear that it doesn't come from there.
No, it's not that. Because that's the thing that when I talk about it on stage, I always say, like, I think if both of you are doing it and it's you're both fine or happy or find it funny, whatever, that's great. If both of you don't do it, that's great. It's when but sometimes I chat to people in the crowd about it, and I just get that whiff of, like, a guy will be like, or she'll go, oh, he does, but I'm not allowed.
Yeah,
and when she says not allowed, it's not like...
I think when I saw you do that gig and there was some flicker of that double standard, and when it's real bad. Yeah. But I also think what's so interesting is that, like, what you... If it's a couple that's very private, meaning sort of like you guys are in that way, what I then need from that couple is... like, I think if the couple is disgusting, I'm the disgust. Like, you want to know that they have sex.
Yes.
You're like, it's fine, but just tell me you're still having sex or whatever. You don't have sex twice a year. Conversely, you want to know, you want a comfortable power dynamic.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So I can think of couples where it's like, he is in charge and they call themselves feminist, but that's not a comfortable power dynamic.
Yeah.
And in that shit,
yeah,
no pun intended, if I found out no one's farting or shitting, I'm like, oh, well, you guys, this is fucking dark shit. But when you can tell it's just like a couple and it's, you know, they're the same age and all that, and you're like, yeah, great. Envy it.
Yeah.
Yes, good. But with the putting in the progesterone, so if my cervix is shortened...
Your cervix. So then, right.
They can put a stitch in to stitch it
so
up.
So that will be what happens to prevent your early labor.
It turns out that it wasn't a momentary thing. But it's one of those things that when I mentioned it to the midwife, she was like, it's just really lucky you told us this, because lots of people don't say it. You think it's something that's happened in the past,
yeah,
and you don't necessarily connect it to the pregnancy.
Yeah.
But
I think that, do you think that some of your, like, I was really diligent with my miscarriage because I was like, plenty of people have repeat miscarriages, and I was like, we are not spending another $7,000.
Yeah.
To find out that actually I have repeat miscarriages. So do you feel that some of that, do you feel like your diligence is about your age? Like, does your pregnancy feel really precious to you because of your age?
It's definitely like, I have that sense now that even thinking in the past week of going, whoa, what if this baby is premature? Like, that's not something I've pictured in the pregnancy, this next, the 9 months of carrying a baby, going, oh, what if it comes early? Like, that's not something I'd put into it. And that then kind of with premature babies, what those difficulties that they might have and sort of picturing those things and the difference that changes to your future outlook,
mm-hmm.
as well as that feeling of miscarriage, like I remember early on those ideas that potentially the idea of miscarrying that is already so connected. Well, I feel really connected to the baby and the idea of losing it is awful. I think,
another dark thing that is like, now it's not a miscarriage, it's a stillbirth, right? Yeah. Like it's a loss of a baby.
Yeah. And so, I guess we do still have one frozen egg in the bag.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so great.
On ice.
Yeah.
Frosties. Yeah. Tanya Edwards had said she was very like, once you've had one, then generally she was like, you get pregnant. The second pregnancy can happen much more easily.
Oh,
that's her. That. Yeah. That's from her experience.
Yeah.
She
was adamant we had a very medical birth.
Yeah.
She's really against like sort of home hippie births and stuff.
Which
like
I assume is the direction you guys would.
Well, I think it would be our natural instinct. Like, but she's really put a willies up.
but with as well just those ideas of like potentially the premature stuff. Like I know there's sort of there is a little bit more hospital intervention because of my age. Yeah. I get to have more scans throughout the whole time. And just these things about the premature thing is more connected to the hospital than potentially I would be. But I'm also totally fine with that. And if that's the way that it kind of happens, and that's all right. But with my age, I'd never really been ready to have a baby before now. I don't think.
Yeah.
Like you're saying that I've had my own life. I've been doing my own thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, now I can. Now I'm ready.
And there's not, like, there's just a price. Like, because, I'm sort of obsessed with the fact that I now won't have two and sort of thinking, like, I don't mean it quite this way, but, like, what did I do wrong that thing I wanted isn't going to happen? And I don't mean it quite that self-critically, but, something's got to give.
Yeah.
And everyone's miserable no matter what. So the people I know who had two kids and had them young, and by young, I'm talking 32 and 36. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I mean by young. They did that because they got together when they were 27. And let me tell you something, that looks pretty rough around the time you're 40, okay?
Yeah.
So they paid that price.
Yeah.
You can have them really young, but then you might not wind up with the person's pair. Maybe that doesn't matter to you, but small C conservative Sarah, I'm like, this family is staying together. No matter how much we fucking hate each other. And I was talking to a comedian who's very successful and was saying, and they had just bought a house. And I was like, you must feel like such a fucking baller. Like, you bought this house, And he was like, yeah, but my 20s were terrible. Like, to have achieved this highly by 34, here's what my 20s looked like.
Yes.
No one was fucking me. My parents were so terrified about my career, all these things. And he didn't, and like, my 20s were spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't know it. I wasn't that happy. But I do feel kind of quite settled and content at 40. Yeah. because the wild oats were sown, and that is such a real thing for some people. So it's like, okay, guess what? I only got one kid. I would have really liked two, but
I had all these experiences.
But I had all these experiences, and that makes me like my husband more.
And my life.
And what I've got. I think also for me, I think if I had gotten pregnant when I wanted to, which was like at 35 or 34, and it was closer to 37, it was me, like, I had worked as a writer and I just wanted to do stand-up so bad, but of course I was terrified to start at the same time. And I think if I had gotten pregnant when I wanted to, it would have been like, oh, I know, I do want to try that stand-up, like, do these open mics or whatever, but I'm a mom now. How is that going to... And I think it would have prevented... And it's not like the world would have lost out because I didn't do stand-up. People talk like that and you're like, you know, I would never become a stand-up. And you're like, you know, no one cares except you. Okay? The world is not emptier without this mid-level shit, okay? So I'm not saying that the world would have suffered, but I'm a happier person because I feel like I found this thing that I like, and not everything for a reason or whatever, because tell that to someone who's lost a child, but like, you know, you kind of go, you're having a kid for the first time at 40, with someone is great. So great, right?
And those things about, you know, motherhood not stopping you from having these other bits of you and continuing your life in the ways that you are committed to, and the identity outside of being a mother being really important as well. Which is what, my best friend messaged me this week, because we released the podcast, and on it I thought it was quite funny. I just said, host of a Hannah Norris in brackets pregnant and Carl Donnelly in brackets comedian, and she wrote to me straight away and she said, that's not good enough.
You can't say that.
And I was like, at the moment, as an actor, I'm sort of feeling a bit like I don't feel like I'm doing enough stuff with to do with that. And she's like, you have to hold on to that now, because if you let that go now, then you're going to let it go.
I mean, I think that's sort of exactly, you know, I have a friend who, after having had her first kid, you know, and she had... You know, she doesn't love her job, and she doesn't quite know, and she knows she wants to live. And after her first kid, I was saying, like, well, why don't you just have the second one kind of quickly? Because if you're already, and she's like, because if I think if I stay out too long, I will never fucking find my footing again.
Yeah.
2 months later, she got pregnant by accident.
Mm-hmm.
We've never spoken about that. And I think, and you know, she does a job, but it's like you, like... It just, whatever is you going, I don't, that like quintuples, like it's so hard. And I was saying to, like, it was with some comedians, and like half of us are parents and half weren't, and it was sort of a shitty gig. So I was like, I was the headline act on that gig, which, you know, means it's a shitty gig, right? But a little bit that is true. Mm-hmm. A little bit that is true. And so this guy was like essentially saying, like, how do you balance it all? That wasn't quite the question, but it sort of was. And I was babbling, as I do. And then what I got to, and I was like, that was very articulately said, was like, if you have a job, if this is your job, you're fine.
Yeah.
If there's a hint of hobby in that job, fucked.
Yes.
So your hobby is gone.
Yeah.
So if the thing is that as an actor,
yeah,
one is netting $4,000 a year, you're not going to do that no more.
Yeah.
If no, it's closer to, you know, and I think that that's what's, and if you're sort of like, you know, I'm not really into this marketing thing I've been doing, I've always sort of pitched, nope, it's going to be marketing. That's you're there. Yeah. It's set. You're done. Yeah. And that, I think, is real.
I had a coffee with my comedian friend, Jimmy McGee, the other day, and he was talking, he was asking how Hannah was and recent scans and all that. And then we just got onto parenthood, and he said that he thinks, you know, we've been friends for 15 years. And he was like, he just said, you know, you are the most ready you'd ever be to be a dad, because he's watched me go through the last 15 years.
Right,
He's seen me go off and bloody drink ayahuasca tea and go off traveling around India, finding myself. And he said it in a nice way, but then he went, because, you know, once you have a kid, you can't go find yourself.
No.
You know, no one's going off to find themselves when they've got a toddler. You literally don't have the... It's not even a luxury. That would be so selfish to do.
Well, it's also the thing that is like, there's no, you can't go on holiday.
Right, and hobbies.
You can't. You'll go on a holiday, but it'll be terrible. You know what I mean? Like, nothing is fun anymore. Yeah. But it's like, but then there's like a day where they walk for the first time,
yeah.
or like bury themselves in your body because they feel shot. Like all those things are really, really real, but they, and it's like so overwhelming you can't manage it. But also it's just sort of like a quotidian moment in your day when the fact that you can never take a good holiday again and you're not sleeping feels like more. I don't know. You know when everyone's like, it's a love, like you guys, it's a, you can't picture the love. It's like. You kind of can picture it, like you can. It's the loss of the other stuff that is actually a little harder to fully grasp until you're there, I think. But I like to be really negative about it because that way you'll be like, Sarah made it sound terrible, but I actually, in comparison, am really enjoying my experience, which so many people do.
Well, obviously, I mean, we could genuinely keep talking about this for a few more hours, I think, in this hotel room.
On and on and on, this little hotel.
On the bed.
Yes.
But I think we'll have to wrap it up.
So funny that you went to throupling, not throupling, but whatever, sex party, and I went to therapy.
Yeah.
In our initial day, talking about the shape of how we're sat in the room. Oh my God, I love it.
Thank you so much
for talking
to us today.
Yeah, it's great.
And we'll be back next week, week 20, which is when maybe we will know the sex of the baby.
I know.
So you're going to find out.
I'm not bothered at the moment, Carl.
I'm leaning towards knowing.
So maybe next week, guys.
Oh, yes, it's going to be a big sort of
reveal. Do you have a preference? Be honest, don't lie. Plenty of people have a preference. I wanted a girl. I got a boy. It's fine.
I don't have a preference as such. I feel, I think I'm still got a hint it's a boy.
I thought it was a girl, then a boy. Now I think it's a girl again. I think I've always pictured having a girl.
Yep.
And especially a girl first.
Yep.
I think that's in my head
that's
somewhere.
In your head. That has to adjust. Yeah.
Yeah.
If that's a boy.
Yep.
So, but that will be revealed maybe next week.
Okay. So thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Next week. Thank you.
Welcome to All Rather Mysterious, the podcast that aims to unlock the mysteries of the past with the key of fact. My name is John Rain.
My name is Eleanor Morton.
My name is David Reed.
I'm doing the man in the iron mask.
Oh, Lord Lucan.
The Holinwell incident.
The Versailles time slip of 1901.
Tamam Shud.
Who was Caspar Hauser?
The Dyatlov Pass incident.
I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, I've no idea how you pronounce it.
It sounded right.
Dyatlov. I'll be doing some deeply culturally sensitive accents throughout this.
Russians don't listen to things.